Well, if we've got baseball, we've got Game 6. They're going for the National League pennant against the Cardinals. And who do we have? JT Snow is here.
Yeah, JT. That's it.
All right. What a pleasure to see JT. Hey, thanks. Man, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, we're doing great. Oh, come on.
A little chilly out here, right?
Whoa. Baseball weather.
Yeah. I called Mario Alioto already. That's where I got my sweatshirt on
nice.
Today. It was freezing out here this morning. But what's your take? Come on, Game 6. You've been down this road.
You know, this team just amazes. I think it amazes everybody, right? I mean, right when they're on the brink of elimination, and you know, I think that's one of their best attributes this year is when their back's been against the wall, is their ability to dig deep and pull out a good game. Because we all know it's been frustrating at times, you know, with the offense, and but just when you think that they're ready to bow out, they just come up with a big game. So, and I would expect the same tonight. And I'll tell you what, the Cardinals are in their clubhouse right now, and they definitely do not want to get to a game tomorrow, especially here. Yeah. So they're going to come out playing hard and firing and being aggressive. And I think if the Giants can get on top, score a couple runs early, yep. and then Vogelsong can go as long as he can, yeah. then Boach can mix and match. It's a lot easier to mix and match the bullpen when you're leading than when you're behind. So that's a key for me. And the other key is, I think we got to get some offense out of the middle of the order somehow.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's Posey and Pence, and Sandoval's picked up a little bit, and even Belt. So those three guys, you know, Posey, Pence, and Belt, they've got to find a way, you know, to get some clutch hits or get on base. And I think you know what to expect with Pagan and Scudero and even Pablo. We know what to expect with Pablo. He's kind of a all-or-nothing type guy. You know, I think we know what to expect with Crawford and even down at the bottom of the order with Blanco a little bit, but it's that middle of the order.
Yeah.
You know, and I've watched Buster's at bats, and you know, I played with Barry, and they didn't pitch to Barry either, but he took walks. And I think you got to be patient, and you got to take walks. If they're not going to pitch to you and they're not going to throw you strikes, take a walk, get on base, and leave it up to the guy behind you.
You know, JT, Henry Schulman did a nice story today in the Chronicle. I don't know if you saw it this morning. He had a nice story about what you just talked about with Buster Posey. He's hit the ball. I mean,
right.
He's gotten some pitches to hit. It's just not falling for him. He's gotten some shots to right, which he likes mm-hmm. to take, and he hit one to center earlier in the week that I thought was going out early in the game, didn't get much distance on it. Is he chasing that much, you think? Is he getting frustrated?
That's a key word, is frustration. I think when you've had the year he's had, and during the regular season is so much different than the postseason, because now everything's magnified and each at bat is big and you don't have many at bats. You know, a 2-for-16 in the postseason is a lot more scrutinized than a 2-for-16 in the middle of the
sure.
year in June or July against somebody. So the guys want to produce. They're trying hard. They get frustrated, but you just got to stay within yourself and. The pitcher's going to make mistakes, even in these big games. I give a lot of credit to the Cardinals, though, because so much like when we play with Barry, the other managers would take him out of the game. You know, we're going to take the best player out of the game, and they've done that with Buster. You know, sliders away, fastballs away, not yeah. throwing him any strikes. So, and he's a guy, I think, that when balls are around the plate and he gets his pitches, he doesn't miss them.
Yeah.
If he chases a little bit or he extends the strike zone, I don't think he's the same type of hitter, but I give credit to Mike Matheny and their staff. You know, they came in and said, we're not going to let Buster beat us, and it's evident that they haven't.
Boy, JT Snow with us. JT, you've watched Brandon Belt all year long.
Mm-hmm.
You've worked with him exclusively so many times. He goes through these funks every
right.
once in a while. He starts looking at pitches, and he starts swinging at things that he shouldn't swing at, and all of a sudden it's strike three,
right.
and he's looking at it, and he can't believe it. What's up with him?
Well, I think the thing with Brandon is that, number one, he's got a great eye at the plate. We've seen it during the year. And sometimes that can work against you when you get in the postseason, because you know you have such a good eye that you start hunting for pitches and you start searching for balls instead of looking for strikes.
Okay.
I mean, there's a big difference between...
What do you mean by that?
Well, when you get in the box, your mindset has got to be that every pitch that pitcher throws is going to be a strike and that you're ready to hit. So your mindset, every pitch is hit, hit, hit. You hear a lot of guys talk about that maybe they say to themselves, yes, yes, yes. And then when it's a ball, it's no or it's take. Instead of the other way around is I'm going to see if it's a strike and then swing at it. There's a big difference because a lot of times then it's too late. And you see Brandon and Will Clark and I talked a lot about this with him last homestand for the series. With the Cincinnati, he was checking his swing a lot and his hands were coming forward a lot with his swing. And when you're doing that, you're not seeing the ball, and you're, as we call, you're hunting pitches. You're hunting for strikes rather than expecting strikes. So our philosophy or our recommendation to him was, you know, go up your first at bat and take the first pitch. We asked him, actually, do you ever see Pete Rose hit? Did you ever see how he took a pitch and tracked the ball into the catcher's mitt?
Sure.
Yeah, and that sets you up. Could set you up for the rest of the game, even the first pitch to slow you down, because you get in these big games and you start rushing and you start racing and you're a young kid and you're trying to prove yourself. And the one thing you don't want to do is get out front, be not waiting on the ball, let that ball get in there. So get in there and, you know, go up there and tell yourself, I'm going to take the first pitch, the first at bat, even if it's right down the middle, because I want to see the ball. I want to slow my body down. So he's it's confidence. You know, he's trying a little too hard. Like I said, I think he's looking, instead of being in that aggressive mindset where I'm going to hit every pitch, he's looking for strikes and telling himself to take.
Well, he took all.
That's a great answer.
Great
really
analysis.
Good stuff.
And it's important for Belt not to watch all three pitches in his first at bat like he did Friday night.
Right.
That must have been incredibly deflating for him as far as his at bats go. And he's going to have a full slate of issues tonight with Chris Carpenter, big game guy. Marty said it. The guy leads the Cardinals franchise in postseason wins, 3-1 in clinchers. But what do you make of Chris Carpenter's comments yesterday about, hey, if we don't win Sunday night, we still got Monday? Is that him trying to convince people that he's not gripping? Or because of his experience, maybe he's not? What do you think?
I don't know, but if I'm a Giants player and fan, I like that comment.
Sure.
You know, absolutely. That tells me, you know, he might be a little reverse psychology or something like that. But, you know, maybe if you're not feeling 100%, I don't know why you would come out and say something like that, you know, on paper to give some bulletin board material. But
yeah,
I think the Giants are going to know going in tonight what to expect and what they're going to get from him, right? Okay. I mean, he's going to throw that little two-seamer to the righties. It starts off away and comes over the outside part of the play. He's going to throw that ball in on the lefties. It comes back over. Mm-hmm. Us older guys call it the Greg Maddux pitch. Maddux used to throw that ball. And he's going to, if he gets ahead or even first pitch, he might flip that big curveball in there. So they got to be patient. And I look for Carpenter to just start working that outside part of the plate to the righties, see if he'll get him to bite, and if he can get some strikes, and then he'll start trying to expand, and Molina will get out there a little bit farther and see how far they can go with the zone.
Yeah, we called it the running fastball. Running fastball, and it's a pretty good pitch.
It just comes back just a little bit. It's got a little bit late movement, and as a hitter, you give up on it because it looks away, but it kind of clips that outside part of the plate. So they've seen him before in the series. They know what they're going to get. It's not like he's going to invent a new pitch and come up. But that's part of the game of baseball is figuring out the game plan from a pitcher as the game goes on. You know, we look at what Barry Zito did the other night and pitch a great game, pitch backwards, and it wasn't necessarily the pitches that he got outs on, but it was the pitches before that set up those pitches. So it was a masterful job.
Beautiful, yeah.
Mike Matheny, as I talked with Andy Bagley today a little bit and other people, he's got to shorten the game again. Mm-hmm. You know, he loves this relief staff. He doesn't care if you're coming up or Bonds or Kent. He doesn't care. Rosenthal's coming in to get you guys. How early does he go to these guys? That's number one. And number two, does it help late? I said this when the series started. I said, watch games 5, 6, and 7. Mm-hmm. If they're still bringing the same guys in, just throwing fastballs, at some point you guys figure it out and you hit fastballs. That's kind of my key to the thing today. I think even if the Giants go down, they may be able to come back against this bullpen.
Absolutely. And as hitters in the dugout before the game, you're in there talking, and one of your thoughts before every game is, let's see how quick we can get that starting pitcher out of the game, because guys in the bullpen are in the bullpen for a reason, right? They weren't maybe good enough to be a starter, so they have a specialty. And these guys all come in throwing high 90s, 100 miles an hour. And like you said, it game in and game out, you can get used to that.
You can
start timing that, and you can start hitting that. And as far as how soon he goes to him, that's a manager's job, right? That's what makes a good manager or a great manager, is to when to pull the trigger on the pitcher. I think for me, the longer a Carpenter settles in and the more pitches he gets, I think he gets tougher. You know, I think the quicker you can get him out of there and get to that bullpen and see some of those fastballs, I think you got a better chance. So,
was there a fastball pitcher that what I just described that eventually you sort of, after a while, you caught up to him if you saw him maybe 4 times in a game or in a series, you saw him 2 or 3 times in a series?
Yeah, there were guys like that.
Anybody come to mind?
Gagne, maybe?
Gagne when he was a starter, and then he went to the bullpen because he got hit around. But yeah, I'm drawing blanks right now. But you know, some of the there's not too many guys.
How about Percival? You faced him in the World Series. How about Percival? That's maybe a good example.
Right,
he's guy would come right at you.
Just come in firing. There's so many guys, and you know, when we played the Mets in 2000, Benitez was like that. He'd come in just firing fastballs. So there's you get the guy that can throw the fastball with another pitch like a Rob Nin or, you know, like a Brian Wilson when Brian's going good with the fastball and just take a little bit off of the cutter. It makes it a lot harder, but heck, as a hitter, you like to see guys that just come in throwing fastballs every pitch.
Well, you know Vogel's song. You know how intense he is, and I could just imagine what's going through his mind right now.
Well, I was thinking about that today, and I had a chance to talk to him after his last start. I was in the clubhouse when he came out of the game, and he was at his locker, and it was really neat. He was by himself, and he was taking his jersey off and threw it over to Murph, and a couple guys had come up. And so when everybody left, I went up, and I talked to him, and I said, how was it? You know, it's for your experience. And the one thing he told me is like, man, that was a lot of fun. That's the first thing he said, and that's when I told him, I said, you got to figure it out because it should be fun when you go out there. And he said, I had a blast. I said, that was a lot of fun. I was locked in, and I was enjoying it, and I was enjoying the crowd and the moment and the how big the game was. And I said, you're going to be a great postseason pitcher if you get another shot. But
well,
I think
he's got it. Let me tell you, he got another shot, and it's the biggest shot of his life.
The one thing he's going to have to try and harness tonight is not to go out and try and duplicate what he did last start. He's got today's a different day. He might have different stuff in the bullpen. You know, his fastball might not be running as much, and that's where you have to find a way to get it done. So you can't expect just to roll out there and go, I'm going to do what I did, you know, 5 days ago.
Well, one thing he did, JT, was he pounded the righties.
Yep.
And he, you know, Holiday couldn't get a good swing off him. David Freese, this is a good right-handed hitting lineup.
Right.
He pounded him inside. And I remember saying to myself, I hope Kane is watching.
Mm-hmm.
Because what Vogelsong did, I thought, was the blueprint for how you have to beat the Cardinals.
Right. And even even Zito did that the other night. I mean, he threw a lot of the righties inside. And he doesn't have the velocity, but if you move it around the zone, you've got to throw inside to be successful as a big league pitcher. And last start, Vogelsong was great. That little two-seamer, that little runner inside. And as a hitter, when the guy starts making those pitches inside you and a little bit off the plate, now when he goes away, the plate's 17 inches wide. Now it seems like it's about 25 inches wide. And now you feel like you got to cover the whole plate. And it's hard. It's hard to hit like that. It's hard to hit. You know, it's hard enough to hit as it is, but then when the pitcher's controlling both sides of the plate, I'll take my chance with a guy like that.
I'm with you. I'm with you. I stood out on the mound, and I looked at home plate. Mm-hmm. Then I stood at home plate and looked at the mound, and I said, I can't believe how close it is. And I said this to Vita and Bill Lasky the other night. I said, how did anybody ever get a hit off you guys? It's not easy to hit.
It's not.
I'm telling you.
You do it because we've played since Little League and high school and college and minor leagues. But, you know, I wish every fan could put a helmet on and get in the box for one at bat, and then they would have a totally different perspective when they're sitting on their couch saying, how do you take that pitch? Or why can't you swing at that? It's like nothing.
Frightening. It's scary. I mean, I've been out there swinging against 60, and I got to admit, I mean, I was nervous. I was terrified.
We get used to it because we trust our instincts, and, you know, we've seen it. It's you see it day after day, but I think it's the hardest thing to do in sports, right? To hit a baseball consistently over day in and day out. You have a round ball and a round bat, and you're trying to hit it square. It doesn't make sense.
That's what Ted Williams said. JT, stick around a little bit.
Absolutely.
We'll take a couple of calls, 808-KMBR. JT Snow here, folks, right?
Right, JT.
Always a pleasure. Always good insight, but great insight from JT. And FP is supposed to call in, so you may enjoy this. FP, if you're listening,
all right,
start dialing right now. We want to get you on the line right here. More coming up on the Sports Leader.
KNBR's Giants pregame continues. You're talking baseball with Marty Lurie on The Sports Leader.
Public House, JT Snow with us, fans.
Thank you.
Boy, we got baseball coming up.
Good stuff.
Baseball coming up. Good stuff from JT, and just a pleasure to have him here. Let us go and bring in my partner from 2010. He is the analyst for the Washington Nationals and just a beloved figure here in the Bay Area, and that is FP Santangelo. FP, nice to hear you.
Hey, FP.
ML, JT, what's going on?
Nothing.
Hey, man, what's up with you? What do you think about this series so far?
Well, I mean, the fact that it got back to San Francisco is fantastic. I got my Kurt Reeder Woody Shed t-shirt on right now for good luck today, and I'm ready to rock and roll. Looking forward to watching the ball game.
All right.
Well, what about this ball club, the Cardinals? And, you know, it broke my heart. You know that. And I was hoping that the Nationals would be in this thing and we'd be seeing you here. What about this Cardinal team, Carpenter in particular, JT, FP? I got so
a lot
many
of initials.
I got a lot of initials going on. Set up this game for me tonight.
Well, you know what, Marty? The Nationals didn't play the Cardinals till September, and they ended up playing them seven times late in the season before the playoffs, and then five games in the NLDS. So, you know, I've seen them play a lot lately, and they're obviously a good offensive ball club, an American League type lineup. But you and I talked before the series, Marty, and we both agreed that Vogelsong sets up nice for the Cardinals. We thought that Zito set up nice for the Cardinals because of his off-speed. I mean, that offense is a fastball-hunting team. They don't miss fastballs out over the plate, but with Vogelsong and anybody with a good two-seam fastball that rides in on those big right-handed hitters of theirs, that plays. And you saw it the first time Vogelsong faced them. And, you know, that's a good matchup for the Giants. They have that two-seam fastball, and I think if you can keep the ball close to those guys and not let them get extended, that's the key. You go two-seam fastballs in, and then you keep monitoring some off-speed stuff away and, you know, throttle them in and out. But, you know, that's a good offensive ball club. And with Carpenter, I would say this. The biggest thing that's impressed me about the 2012 Giants is their tenacity and the intangibles and the fact that they've kind of willed themselves into this thing. But they're facing a guy today that's a lot like them. I mean, he's a big game pitcher. He loves to be on that stage. He's got some intestinal fortitude, I guess, is a way to put it on the radio. And if I was the Cardinals, that's the guy I'd want on the mound. His stuff isn't what it used to be, but he's still Chris Carpenter, and he loves the big stage, and he's going to give you a battle no matter what.
Very good, FP. FP Pecan here with you. JT Snow, Marty. FP, we're having a lot of fun with Ryan Vogelsong's superstition of eating the chicken enchiladas the night before he throws. I wonder if you'd kind of share what maybe some superstitions you had when you played, and then JT follow you up, FP.
I didn't really have too many superstitions. The one I had the most was just wanting to win a baseball game. And, you know, it's more about routine, I think, for a baseball player when you go through a 6-7 month season and you just want to keep the same routine. So if you eat enchiladas and it works, you eat enchiladas and it works. And it's part of your routine. So I really didn't have too many.
JT?
Well, I think like FP was saying with baseball, it's an everyday sport. And so when you're going good, everyone will tell you, try and keep doing the same things you did. It puts you in the right frame of mind because – you know, if you do something different, maybe take a different way to the ballpark, and you've been hot the last week.
That sounds
week.
Like a superstition
absolutely,
more than a routine.
Yeah, absolutely. You keep going the same way, or maybe you find some food. I was a big it's funny because when I was in the minor leagues, you have no food down there in the clubhouse, right? You have peanut butter and jelly, and you have some fruit. And then you get to the big leagues, you have all this nice food in the clubhouse, and you have a chef cooking. But I still – my whole big league career, after batting practice, come in and have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, strawberry jelly and peanut butter, and have a Coke, and then right before the game, a cup of coffee.
Yep.
And I was a big gum chewer. I didn't chew tobacco. I tried it and it didn't go over too well with me, so I quit. And I would chew gum, and after my first two at bats, if I didn't have a hit, I would throw the gum out and get a couple more pieces, because I always thought it was a gum's fault for not relaxing me. So that's probably the only thing I really did was chewing the gum.
JT, you remember this. But when I was with the Giants, JT and I played catch every day before batting practice.
Yep.
And we had lost five or six games in a row. We were playing Pittsburgh. And I said, let's change it up a little bit. So JT gave me his first baseman's glove, which he was left-handed. I gave him my outfield glove, which I was right-handed. So we're playing catch behind the cage, opposite hands, and we look like idiots.
Yeah.
And Dean Lamont walks by us and goes, what in the hell are you guys doing? He goes, and JT looked at us and said, we're trying to switch it up, man. We got to get a win today. So little things like that. But
that's great.
I remember that, yeah. We look like we never played baseball before, and we're back there behind the cage throwing with our opposite hands. So I think we got a win that night and probably rolled off a bunch of wins in a row. So,
FB, you know, looking at this Giant lineup, you look at Pagan, who I still say he's the guy for me. He makes this thing go. He hits a ball out of the park. Just every time he gets on base, something happens. And you look at Scudero. But after that, boy, they go dead. And maybe the kids, maybe one of the lefties will get a rally going. This offense has got to pick it up a little bit. It puts a lot of pressure on the pitchers.
Well, the postseason, Marty, I mean, you got to manufacture runs. You got to find ways to get guys on, get them over, get them in, do the little things. And I think, for the most part, the Giants have been doing that in the postseason very well. I mean, you got to get the big hit, though. I mean, every postseason you look back to, it's all about runners in scoring position. What's your average with runners in scoring position? You know, up until the last game, they've been looking for that big hit. So, to me, you know, you get ahead early at home. The key for today, and I said this for the Nationals in the playoffs, and I find it true for every team when you're playing at home, especially with how crazy that crowd is going to be today at AT&T, score early. A couple of runs early. Get the crowd into it. Get that place into a frenzy. Use the home field advantage. And I talk about this all the time. As a player, when you're standing out there as a visiting player, and you look around and the crowd starts to get into it, you feel that. I don't care how many big games you've been in. I don't care how many World Series you've been in. When you're on the road and you feel that crowd and you feel that noise, you start to think to yourself, uh-oh, here they come. And, you know, the crowd and the home field advantage, to me, is huge. So the fact that they got this back to home for Game 6, yeah. Score a run early, do something great early, get the crowd into it. Not that you need to get a Giants crowd into it, but if you can whip them up into a frenzy early and get that place absolutely rocking, now if I'm a Cardinal, I'm standing out there going, uh-oh. And you guys saw it, JT, you know, I don't mean to bring up a bad subject, but, you know, in 2002, you lose Game 6, it's tough to come back in a Game 7 just it's like tough. That. So if the Giants win today, obviously, they got a great shot of going to the World Series. I think today is the pivotal game, without a doubt. I mean, you have to win, of course, to keep this thing going. But you win today, you win tomorrow. I think it's that simple.
And just to reiterate what FP said, I've heard a lot of the comments from the fans of first series with the Reds and now the first couple games of Cardinals, and you hear people calling in saying, well, the crowd wasn't into it, and we didn't have a lot to cheer about. But if we know baseball, right, it's a game of averages, right? They're going to average out, and I got a pretty good feel that the crowd hasn't had a lot to cheer about we played four home games.
Lost three of them.
Right. But I got a feeling that the next 2 days, baseball's a game of averages, and it's going to average out. And I can't agree more with FP than to get a couple runs on the board early and, you know, something like Zito the other night laying a bunt down, something kind of crazy, out of the ordinary to get the crowd. And once that crowd gets into it and they start waving the orange towels, I mean, as a visiting player like FP said, you feel it, and you're like, uh-oh, we're up against it.
But I mean, look at it this way. This is a bonus game. I mean, Just getting it back to San Francisco, the crowd should be into a frenzy just because they get to see a Game 6 today, just because their ball club's at home. And now you take that, almost playing with house money at this point, and use it to your advantage and, you know, get that place rocking early. I'll tell you what, if it's the atmosphere that I saw in 2010, if I was a Cardinals player, I'm that flight back. Their motto last year was happy flight. That was not a happy flight for them coming back across the country, having to go into that environment. And I remember when the Nationals were just getting into the playoffs, and people were saying, are they going to go to San Francisco? Are they going to go to Atlanta when they were still at St. Louis? And where are they going to play on the road? And everyone was saying, well, they match up good with the Giants. They've beat them 5 out of 6 times this year. And I said, well, that's a hostile environment, the most hostile environment, I think, in the big leagues now, especially since 2010. And that's where the fans have to come into it today and just absolutely lose their minds early in the game.
I was going to ask FP one quick question without giving away all the secrets, but the Nationals had a pretty good record against the Giants this year, 5-1. I was going to ask him if he could tell us a little bit about how the Nationals pitched the Giants and why they were so successful.
Well, because, you know, as a power staff, I think the Nationals caught the Giants at the right time, especially in D.C. when it was about 115 degrees out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, those guys were used to that kind of weather with that kind of humidity, so caught them at the right time there. You know, and then when they came to San Francisco, they played them very well, too. And, hey, there's different points of the season, and when the Nationals played the Giants early in the year, August or whatever it was, I can't even remember at this point, the Giants weren't as good as they are right now. And you know, that staff made a lot of offenses look bad just because you got a Strasburg, a Gio Gonzalez, a Jordan Zimmermann, all guys that throw in the mid-90s, a lot like the Cardinals' bullpen. And, again, to reiterate, you got to score on the starting pitching for the Cardinals. If you get to that bullpen and the Cardinals have a lead, 6, 7, 8, 9, with those guys throwing 98 and just bringing the fuzz and not even worrying about location, just throwing it by people, and score early, get the crowd into it, and don't let that Cardinals' bullpen have anything to say with any game, or you're not going to win.
FP, what do you think of Holiday's slide? I'd love to get your take on it, and we've seen it a million times. And, you know, it seems like a long time ago now, there's been a lot of water under the bridge since then. But what was your take on it?
I'm pretty old school when it comes to stuff like that. And I always tell people, Marty, if I could do one thing again, unretire, it would be to break up a double play. That's the one thing I would want to do if I could have one game. But the way he did it was Bush. It was horrible, and it's not the way you play the game. I don't care how much he apologized. And to me, the way you retaliate, and the Giants didn't do it, and that's not their style, but like I said, I'm a little more old school. I think you drill somebody when it's least convenient. You lose a battle to win a war, and I would have drilled him right in the ribs the first time up. I really would have. I mean, you have to send a message. But, you know, I understand the significance of the games. I understand that it's very important. But, I don't know, I would have lost the game to drill Holiday for what he did versus maybe, you know, winning the game and not hitting him. But he's a good guy. He's not a dirty player. But when you do something like that, it doesn't matter what your reputation is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go to injure somebody like that. That's why I play second base a lot. You use the bag to protect yourself. And if you're on the backside of the bag, that's why guys turn it from the backside, to use the bag to protect them. Because usually you have to slide in front of the bag. And a quick story, I was in Double A in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and I can't remember the guy's name, and I'm turning a double play in the first inning, and it was a slide just like Holiday. And I got up, I was dazed, I looked down, there was no slide marks in front of the bag. I jumped up, and we started hooking right there at second base. Next thing I know, I had 50 guys on top of me, and, you know, I got suspended for 3 games. But, you know, when you take somebody out almost like a catcher on a double play, you're so open, you're so unprotected as a middle infielder right there. And you know it's the big leagues, and you know guys are going to come after you. You know you got to get some air as soon as you let go of the ball. But you don't think about that when you're behind the bag because you're using the bag to protect you. So now you're ultra-vulnerable because you're not thinking about leaving your feet and getting up in the air because you got the bag to protect you. When somebody goes over the bag to slide like that, one of the worst slides I've ever seen. I thought it was horrible, to be honest with you.
I think just what FP said, it must be a generation thing, because I was in the runway during the game, and I saw it, and we all said it was wrong, and it wasn't right. And I'm not going to name any names, but some of the players were down there, some of the young guys, and they looked at me, and they said, what would you do? What should you do? And I said, the first guy that came up next inning would get it right in the ribs, and then it's end of story. The umpires don't have time to talk and confer and throw somebody out. I said, but in today's game, you got to get your first shot in.
Sure.
So they were like, really, really? And I'm like, absolutely. I said, that's the way we played the game. It doesn't have to wait around until Holiday comes back. The first guy that came up would get it right in the ribs or in the backside or somewhere down in the legs. And then you just tip your cap and the game goes on. Yeah. But
and we used to walk uphill, and we used to walk uphill in the snow to the ballpark every single day.
Do you think Holiday gained favor in his own clubhouse, or do you think his own teammates were like, come on, bro, that was Bush?
Oh, I'm sure there was teammates that thought that. And, you know, and as a teammate, I've been with guys that have done that, and you're like, am I going to get it in the ribs because he did that? But, hey, it, like you said, it's water under the bridge. You know, Holiday's a class guy. He made a mistake. It was probably not the smartest thing he's ever done. And when you get in a playoff scenario, maybe you're going a little bit too fast upstairs and you're jacked up and you want to do something to help your ball club and you go a little overboard, and he did. But in saying that, sometimes when you go overboard, you got to pay the price. He didn't have to. But like I said, water under the bridge, it's all about game six today. And hopefully, you know, obviously I'm rooting for the Giants for obvious reasons. You know, they beat the Nationals, and with my Giants background, I hope they win today and force a game seven. I think if they win today, they will definitely win tomorrow.
Wow, good. FP, thanks so much for calling in. Always a pleasure, huh?
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good show. And right. You get some of that 2010 karma going today.
All right, man. I always appreciate FP Santana.
Right on, FP.
Boy, what a pleasure. Boy, very good. Good stuff, huh?
Yeah. Good stuff.
All right, let's take a break. JT's still here. We'll keep him here just a couple more minutes.
Yeah.
A couple more minutes, and we'll come back. Get your calls, and if we got a couple of people on hold, we'll get them on. If you got any questions for JT, we'll talk some ball with you right here on the Sports Leader.
KNBR 680.
You take that, almost playing with house money at this point, and use it to your advantage and get that place rocking early. I'll tell you what, if it's the atmosphere that I saw in 2010, if I was a Cardinals player, I'm that flight back. Their motto last year was happy flight. That was not a happy flight for them, coming back across the country, having to go into that environment. And I remember when the Nationals were just getting into the playoffs, and people were saying, are they going to go to San Francisco? Are they going to go to Atlanta when they were still at St. Louis? And where are they going to play on the road? And everyone was saying, well, they match up good with the Giants. They've beat them 5 out of 6 times this year. And I said, well, that's a hostile environment, the most hostile environment, I think, in the big leagues now, especially since 2010. And that's where the fans have to come into it today and just absolutely lose their minds early in the game.
Now back to KNBR's Giants pregame. You're talking baseball with Marty Lurie on The Sports Leader.
Ryan Vogelsong tries to get it done tonight. You heard FP. If the Giants can win tonight, he says he guarantees game 7 tomorrow. Nice to see everybody out here. Boy, this is going to be quite an afternoon. A nice crowd here watching us beyond the glass as well. JT Snow is here just for a couple of minutes. And let's get to the phones, 808-KMBR. Let's go to Vance in Cyprus. Vance, you've got a question for JT.
JT, I want you to straighten these guys out. They always rag me about being from Cyprus. They don't know where that is. Los Alamitos High School. Come on.
That was my rival.
Coach Gibson?
Huh? Yeah, that was our rival.
Coach Gibson and Los Alamitos, Seal Beach. That's right in the middle of it, right?
That's right there, yeah. That's where I grew up. It's old stomping grounds.
There you go. They're all acting like I'm out in the Tulies or someplace.
I still don't know where Cyprus is.
Maybe think it's Cypress Point, the golf course down in Monterey. That'd be nice.
Or Cypress Hill.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or maybe anyway. In Greece. All right. So go ahead, Vance. What do you got for JT?
Well, JT, it was just a pleasure to watch you play. You're always giving 100%, a true giant. And, you know, it's just a great following down here. We still enjoy the legacy you left down here.
Thank you.
You and your family are the class acts from Orange County. So that's what we got.
All right.
So giant.
All right, Vance. Thank you. All right, Mike in Newark, 808-KMBR. Mike, good afternoon. Game 6 coming up. Vogelsong and Chris Carpenter. Giants try to stay alive here and win the pennant. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I'm right with that, man. I got a question for Casey about timing mechanism at the plate. When I used to play back in the day in college, I used breathing. You know, like taking a deep breath.
Yeah, you're cutting out a little bit, but I think I got the gist of the question. Techniques at the plate, breathing techniques or anything like that?
Yeah, they're big. I mean, you watch the good hitters. They step out of the box. They take a deep breath. They might even close their eyes or visualize. But I'm a big believer in that. Any tense situation you get in, whether it's a baseball field or on a golf course or something, take a deep breath. Let it all out, and that'll relax every part of your body. And you have to, as a hitter, you have to visualize yourself. And we talked about this a couple shows ago. Starts in the dugout when you're, you know, the third batter of the inning. And then when you get to the on-deck circle, you got to visualize the at-bat, visualize what's going to happen, and visualize success before it happens, because a lot of times what you think can happen, it will happen. So
how
that's
did
a
you
big
learn
part.
That?
My dad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my dad taught me that at an early age. And he had me, when I was a little leaguer, he said, when you go to bed tonight, lay in your bed and close your eyes. And he said, take 2 minutes and visualize your four at-bats tomorrow and visualize yourself getting a couple hits and hitting out of the ballpark and making a couple plays on defense. And I'm not kidding you. It would happen the next day, you know.
Wow.
I was one of those little leaguers that slept in my uniform the night before the game and was up at 6 a.m. eating pancakes. And but visualization is a big part of this game. It's a big part of being successful.
Got it. Very good.
I'm going to visualize our next segment when we go to break here. Hey, let me ask you about Hunter Pence based on that. He's got a very unorthodox style in the batter's box, and I know fans get frustrated because he looks like a spaz kind of in the box, but that's him getting a rhythm, him that kind of rocking back and forth, right?
Right. Every hitter's got some type of rhythm that they get, whether it's, you know, waving your bat or we watched the one guy that comes to mind for me for some years is Jim Thome. Jim Thome used to point the bat at the pitcher, and then when the pitcher started his windup, he would swing it back around and get it into his hand. You never want to stand there in the box and not have any movement, and that's what Hunter Pence does. And, you know, I know he's struggling a little bit, but it's worked for him in the past. And the hard thing in this sport is when it's not going good is you want to change things up real quick and you want to try something new, but you got to just stay with your program, and guys know what's best for them. And, you know, everybody's got a different routine. You try and keep the hands loose and the body loose. And one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was we were playing the Cardinals in St. Louis one year, and Mark McGwire was playing first base, and there was a pitching change, and he was on first, and I was talking to him, and I said, what are you trying to do at the plate? What's your approach? And, you know, what are you thinking about? And the only thing he told me was, he says, I hit with my eyes. And at the time, it didn't make sense. And I said, what do you mean? He says, well, if you watch my at-bats, I'm always he's always getting his eyes big and getting them open. Take a deep breath. And he says, I just try and see the baseball. I trust my hands. I trust my mechanics. Mm-hmm. I've been doing it for years. I try and see the ball and hit the ball with my eyes. And ever since then, it makes a lot of sense. trying to see the ball as quick as you can out of the pitcher's hands. And that was his one thought, was I'm going to see the ball and hit with my eyes.
Trust your hands. Well,
exactly.
All right, one more here for JT. Johnny in Oakland, 808 KMBR. Johnny, you're on KMBR 680.
I have a question, a little inside baseball thing. I think that Matt Cain got payback on the Cardinals right in game three. First hitter, John Jay, hit him in the knee, and they didn't say anything on the podcast, but it looked to me like a payback pitch. What did you guys think?
Well, I thought it was, and I said it to Vida Blue and Bill Lasky and Bip Roberts and Greg Poppin. They kind of didn't agree with me, but I said in my mind, I said, Cain is old school. First guy that came up, he drilled him. And he didn't miss a pitch the rest of the night. And I said that was the payback. And it was very quiet. Nobody agreed with me, but that's what I said. I don't know.
Well, I agreed with you completely because he had such control, and he hit him right in the knee.
He drilled him. Come on. It's the first guy up, and he didn't care if he's getting on. He's in the stretch. He said, I'm Matt Cain, and for what you did, I'm hitting you. And he went right at his knee with a fastball, and I thought he did. But you and me are the only ones to think that.
Well, McCarver and Buck didn't think so. Anyway, I just, Marty, we talked about this a couple of days ago, and I'll be at the game tonight. It'll be my third straight postseason game. I'm a Niner alum from the glory years, and we got to get the stadium literally rocking. I mean, the first couple of innings, these first few games, everybody's sitting on their hands waiting for the Giants to lead, acting like, we just won the World Series, blah, blah, blah. Folks, get hungry.
All right. All right, Johnny, we'll see you out here. All right, no, he's on it.
Well, I think a big key is the fans that are sitting down by the bullpen. This is one of the most – they did a poll of opposing players, and they said that the Giants fans, and especially the bullpen, was one of the toughest in all of baseball. And I'll tell you what, when the relief pitchers aren't down there, right, they're in the dugout, and then when they get the call, they run down there. So when they see these guys run down there, it's up to those fans down. Let them have it. Everything you got, because that'll get them – It'll work to our favor if you get him riled up. And they used to do the whoop woo thing with the ball,
right.
And I'd like to see that come back, but that has a big impact. So those fans sitting down by the bullpen tonight can have a big impact on this game.
All right, JT, thanks so much.
You got it, guys.
Folks, JT Snow.
Thanks, JT. It was awesome.
JT is in uniform tonight. JT, you're in uniform tonight, and you'll be down in the cage for some soft toss and things.
Yeah, we're down there, myself and Will Clark and Sean Dunston. We're some of the assists. So we're down there soft tossing guys and even cranking up, throwing some BP to them and putting balls on the tee, trying to make it as easy as possible and as less stressful for the players so they can do their job and hopefully they can have success. So we're the guys behind the scenes.
Very good.
We're the little gym rats under under the stands.
Not bad gym rats.
Yeah,
Will
fun.
Clark,
yeah,
JT
fun.
Snow, and Sean Dunston. JT Snow,
thanks,
let's
guys.
Hear
right,
it for
thank
him.
You.
Very good. Great job. Boy, if I could take a week off, man, you got the job. I want to tell you that. Right, Pat?
Well, I love you, Marty, but JT brings the ladies
good.
In. You
He's
know what
been
I mean?
Terrific. No, very good. Thank you so much. Boy, that is great. It's such good inside baseball.
Had a lot of fun this hour, Marty.
And he's so, as I say, he's been with us every weekend and gracious and signed stuff all the time.
Sure.
Well.